sahanau bhunaktu sahavīryaṃkaravāvahai tejasvināvadhītamastu mā vidviṣāvahai Om shanti shanti shantih rupam lot sorry my mind has gone blank on it rupam drishyam lochanam drik tadrishyam driktu manasam drishyadhivritaya sakshi drigeva natu drishyate. So let's meditate on the second type of meditation, the saguna meditation he mentioned last time. So as we said, there's the different types, and one type is going to be savikalpa with some sort of form, with something for the mind to grasp onto. So settling ourselves comfortably, take a few deep breaths. So this type of savikalpa meditation is along with shabda, using the pointers that the Shruti uses, Upanishad uses. Whenever there's a nama, a word, the moment shabda is there, the word, then it mind focuses in that direction. Anything we say, the mind understands and takes the mind towards that object. So the Vedantic statements are helping to point my attention towards this, towards the Atma, towards the consciousness. So in the verse that he mentioned about this, he said, Asanga Satchidanandaha Swaprabho Dvaitavarjitaha Asmi Iti Shabdavidha Ayam Samadhi Savikalpakaha. So he says the Atma is asangaha, asangaha, non-attached, untouched by other things. Whatever comes in contact with something else is affected by it, gets affected by and changes over time then. The mountain is very strong, very huge, but the wind keeps coming by, the rain comes by year in, year out, and then over time, then its form changes. I go through so many experiences in my life. So of course, some things are changing. But also something isn't changing, or why would I see that I'm the same person? Something stayed the same. So the drik, the sakshi, this one doesn't change. It's not affected by the changes in the drishyam. The examples he gives earlier in the text, vision, is not affected by the colors and forms. Vision is vision. Just like a camera not affected by what it's filming. So the drik, eyesight, and the drishyam, rupa, forms, the sight not affected by the what it's seeing, by the drishyam. Same way I, sakshi, am not affected by what I observe, what sakshi comes and goes within the purview of Sakshi, the body-mind complex, the world. These come and go. Eyes witnessing awareness remain the same, untouched by the changes. And this Sakshi is Satchidananda. I am and I know. This is intrinsic to me as a conscious being. I am and I know. All else changes, but these facts change constantly throughout. I say I am this or I am that. The identification with some experience, that changes. I know this. I don't know that. That also changes. But I exist. I am knowingness. This remains. And also ananda can be seen as ananta, not limited. I, as the conscious being, am not limited by anything. Can the camera be limited by the action happening in the movie? Can the screen be affected by all the activity in the movie? Anything I experience is within the field of my awareness. Like objects in the space. I say I feel limited. Meaning, I'm aware of an idea of limitation. Just like something projected on a screen. So that idea of limitation is within the field of awareness. Limitation can only come when I identify with a part of something like the body of the mind. But as witnessing consciousness, there's nothing to limit me. And I'm also Swaprabha, Swayam Prabha, self-luminous. The moon is seen at night because it reflects the light of the sun. The sun needs nothing in order to illuminate. Self-luminous. The mind can think, can do many wonderful things. But if the Sakshi isn't behind the mind does nothing. I go to deep sleep, where is the mind? I come out of the sleep, oh, I had a nice sleep. So I was still there, I was aware. Whatever I do, I'm conscious, I'm aware. Can I even imagine not being conscious aware? I can imagine being aware of nothingness. And I don't do anything. Anything else I do takes some effort. To be conscious aware, I do nothing. It just happens. Not dependent on anything else. Throughout every experience I ever have, I'm conscious and aware, independent of what the experience would be. Also says the Atma is Dvaita Varjitaha, not dual. Advaitaha, non-dual. As a body-mind, yes, I'm separate from whatever is not within the purview of that body-mind. As the witnessing awareness, the case is different. You have many forms of clay. You have the cups and the saucers and the bowls. Whatever form you make out of the clay, it remains the same. It's in and through all of them, but the clay remains the same. There isn't clay and cups, bowls, saucers. There's clay as cups, bowls, saucers, and the clay remained the same. You go to the movie theater, you watch the movie, there isn't light and characters and scenery and activity on the screen. There is light as characters, as the scenes, as the activity. All of that activity in the movie depends on the light. Light doesn't depend on the movie. Similarly, there is I, the conscious awareness. And there is a whole slew of experiences. There's waking, dream, deep sleep experience, sights, smells, sounds, different emotions, different thoughts. So there isn't myself, the conscious being, and experiences. Myself, the conscious being, expressing, manifesting as experiences. Me, the conscious being, in and through all the experiences, just as the clay is through all of those items. The light is through every part of the movie. Without the conscious being, no experiences. The experiences cannot exist, though, without the conscious being behind it. So each of these terms, I can take and contemplate on them, and they point back to me, the conscious being. Asangaha, untouched, unattached. Satchidananda, existence, I am. I'm conscious, knowingness. I'm limitless. Swaprabha, self-luminous, being conscious, aware, depends on nothing else. Dvaita Varjitaha or Advaitaha, non-dual, seemingly separate from everything else, but I'm in and through every experience. Yet, Asangaha, not touched by any of the experiences. Shanti, shanti, shanti. So this is an example of how one would, okay, my sound is off. Let's see, because I took off the headset. Can you hear me now? It's okay? Yes? No. Oh, unmute.
You're on mute.
Can you hear me now? Yes? I will change. Now. Now you hear me. Yes. Okay. My voice is dependent on the system. But the system isn't dependent on my voice. So in this way, this is a sample of how one focuses on these things, the examples he was giving, meditating, where at first a prop is needed for it. And so he said there are two different ways to do it. One is as the Driktisya Viveka that he was giving, the main thing here, where taking anything, my hearing, my thinking, my emotion, anything, and I see I'm the observer of that. That's the first way that he gave. And the second was this, where you take these concepts and they're pointers. And they're very interesting pointers because they can't point exactly, you know, it's not kind of like San Francisco to there and you can see San Francisco at the distance, a little different, but similar also, because they help to point out to me what's there. They help to sit, to show me, you know, to reveal what's already there, that I'm there, that this is myself, my nature. And what happens is they can't capture it. A similarity is when it says San Francisco, this direction, 50 miles, that sign can't capture San Francisco, but it can point you in the direction. So no term is going to capture myself as the conscious being, but it helps to point my attention that direction. So this is what these do. And of course, the more that I understand it, then the more I study, look into, then the more it helps directly to point to there, where at the beginning it doesn't as much. Kind of like when you're studying a language, at first the words you study, and they don't really point out too much. You know, you kind of have to look up, right? Go to the dictionary, look at your notes. And slowly, and then you have to, as you're reading, you translate it to your language, right? But then slowly it directly points out you don't need the dictionary for it to translate to another language. So similar here, slowly it helps to point in this direction. So here then still it's using something for the meditation, using these terms. That's why for this type of meditation, more study is necessary, because the more the concepts are explained, the more concepts are understood, the more it's going to naturally point me in that direction. Without that, it's not going to have as much substance what to point towards, like this, when using shabda like this. So then, he had the two types of savikalpa. Then he has to also go to the nirvikalpa here, in this way. One thing before that, actually, one interesting thing about this type of using the shabda for the meditation, for contemplation on Atma. Usually words will point to something and to bring some sort of experience. This is what happens. You know, you point out something about, look at this, you know, look at this animal crawling here, this lizard or something. It brings a certain experience, something different. Look at this flower. Oh, wow, this flower looks like that one, or is a form that I haven't seen before. Smell I haven't smelled similar before, like this. So it brings you towards an experience. Here it takes you away from experience, drops the idea of the experience. This is really what it's bringing towards. Because you say non-dual. Well, non-dual is that experience. It's helping to drop experiences, not in order to bring up new experiences. So you have like this in the different things that it brings up in this way. Existence, right? I am. Is that going to bring an experience? It's going to take the attention away from the myriad of multiple experiences. This is really what it does. So this is an interesting thing, how this works. It's not pointing towards other things, because pointing back towards myself. And myself, is that an experience? Do you ever have any experience without yourself being there? No. So it's not towards something new. This is an interesting thing about what these do. Kind of like the cleaning. When you clean something, you use the cleaning material, and the cleaning material gets rid of the other stuff. You don't want it to go there and stay there. You want it to clean the other stuff, and that's it. It goes away with it. So this is how, what this does, instead of adding, it's just like the soap to take everything else off like this. And then when you clean also, after clean, do you need to keep the soap? No. So in this way, this is an interesting thing that is done by this. So then, let's go to the next verse where he starts talking about then the nirvikalpa, without ideation, like this. He says here, svanubhutirasaveshat drishya shabdavupekshyatu nirvikalpas samadhisyat nivatasthitadipavat. But nirvikalpa samadhi is that in which the mind becomes steady like the unflickering flame of a lamp, kept in a windless place, and in which one becomes indifferent to both cognized objects, the drishya, and sounds, shabda, due to the absorption in one's true nature of awareness bliss. So it happens, anything that your attention is totally absorbed in, other things drop off by themselves. When you're really absorbed in, what does other thing? You're studying, you're totally with your study. If there's some noise, or somebody's cooking something, you don't pay attention, you're not aware of it, like this. In the Bhagavatam, there's the story of this one Avadhut, what is the name of this one? Not coming to my mind, but this one who, mendicant who went, and he came and he said he has 24 gurus in this way. And he goes and teaches about how he learned the higher truths, like this. Dattatreya, story of Dattatreya. So what happens is, one of the stories he says he learned from the arrow maker, because the arrow maker was sitting there and so absorbed in his work that a whole retinue came by with elephants, and the king was riding on, and everybody went out in big fanfare, and they were playing the drums and horns and everything. And then people came and said, wow, that was really nice. Did you see what? Did you hear all that, you know, that noise and everything from that music? Hear what? Because he wasn't aware. He was just absorbed in doing the arrow like this, in this way. So no, and Mol is studying, so we know he's like this when he studies, right? But the point is, anything you really pay attention, you get absorbed in, and other things you drop at that time. This is what happens. Absorption, whatever it would be, like this. So here also, absorption, this, you absorb, and then you other things you forget. Look, deep sleep, first dream is absorption, we forget the external world, and then deep sleep absorption, we forget the mind as well. And when we're absorbed something, so many things we forget. you know, we have some suffering, some difficulties and this, but we forget it when we're absorbed in other things. I'm eating something tasty, I forget all the, you know, do you remember all coronavirus or so many people suffering this? You forget that moment. So when you're absorbed in something. So you're also, this absorption is something that here it's in as in this type of thing. Different ways others do it, but this is specifically for what the idea of samadhi is, total absorption like this. So this is the idea here. So he's saying this is an example is given so many places. You have in Gita, and then you have many other places, the idea of the flame that's not flickering, like it's in a closed, windless place. When you really absorb something, it's like this. And of course, anything you're focusing your attention in, slowly the mind gets more absorbed in it. And usually something that I like more, speaks to me, I'm going to get absorbed into easier. Something I don't like as much will be harder for me to be absorbed in, like this, because my mind is going to want to run to something else. Now, one nice thing is, myself is the most like thing in the world, and that, in this class we haven't had, but that was discussed in certain places in Upanishads and discussed in the Panchadashi. Because with I, when you're really content, happy, more and more things drop, you're with yourself. If something else is very important, I really like this because I identify with, because it has something to do with me, my team, my family, right? My children, it's because connected to me. If I wasn't there, if there wasn't the I there, how could it be connected to me in any way? There wouldn't be any connection to me, so there's no I for it to be connected with. So in any case, so here naturally, so the absorption is, you know, some things about myself I don't like, but that's my mind, not I, right? Like this. So the absorption oneself then, of course, is most wonderful. But the thing is, here we have to take the peel off and just stay with, not with the essence of it. And these other ones help. There's a nice example that's given in this where the pole vaulter, when they pole vault, they have to run and then they have to push on this pole, right? When they go high enough, they have to let go of the pole in order to go over the bar on the top. If they say, you know, this pole has really helped me. I really love this pole, you know. Look how great. I've gotten to great name and fame because of it. I've reached these 4 meters higher. Whatever height they do, I don't know. Then I want to take it with me. They can't take it, you know. It has to be dropped like this. So the pole in this way is holding on to something. So namarup, driktrishya, or the shabda. Then after it's letting go is the nirvikalpa, without just abiding in, without having to put effort into, just naturally staying there. This is the absorption. So this is the absorption that he's talking about here, steady, unflickering, just being with that. Now, one thing about this is, in yoga, Raja Yoga, this is seen as the goal. Goal? Absorbed. Attention absorbed. Because that's what the goal is for. Just like the driver, their goal is to take you point A to point B, got to point B, done. Your goal is, that's helpful for you to get there, but that's not your goal. That's just one station you're going to, because you need to pick something up there. So the same way here, in Vedanta, that's not a goal. Vedanta goal is self-knowledge. So the absorption can be helped. If somebody has absorption, that's great. Then they observe the absorption. Yes, that I'm just absorbed in that. Very good. Just stay in that naturally. So in this way, absorption can happen, but it's not necessary to happen. It's not needed. But if I'm absorbed in, great. I meditate on these things. I stay absorbed myself. Wonderful. I can just stay with that. Great. So this is an important point, that this isn't the essential thing, but it also is something that is there, like this. So this is one important point in it. What happens also here, he says that it's like the flame in the windless place. So what happens when I'm in that balanced place, very nice. What is it that takes me, the flame, the wind that disturbs that flame? I'm totally fine. Some noise came next to us from across the street. Doesn't make a difference. It came, went, doesn't disturb me. Right? Good. Now that noise sounds like it's in my yard. Right? Oh, there's somebody in my yard, right? Now my attention goes, right? Is that the cat last week had dug up my vegetables? That the cat eating my vegetables? I'll be very upset. I'll get angry, right? Or your family's coming. Oh, is that the family coming? Oh, I really look forward to seeing them. So that takes you up. So what is it, the wind? It's raga dvesha, my likes, dislikes. Because when it was something across the street, neighbors are doing something or their dog is doing something, makes no difference. Why should it take me away from myself? I'm indifferent towards it. Right? But then the moment it's something touches me that I've like or dislike towards, that's what pulls me away from it, like this. So the raga dvesha are literally pulling me away from myself, like this. And there's Swami Chidananda, Swami Shivananda's successor. One place he says, like this, he says, why do you disturb the peace? Because what happens inside, as conscious being, there's no disturbance, you're totally fine. We want to blame the world, why am I not at peace? But why are you, but I'm disturbing my own peace. I can blame the whole world. But where's raga dvesha, likes and dislikes? Where's it sitting? Is it sitting outside in the object? I have an object here, right? Here's an object. Wow, the color's really nice. I really like it. Oh, wonderful. You know, I really want to write in purple today, right? And then this one comes along. I don't like it. Too strong. Rajasa color. I don't like it. Is it in the pens, in their colors, that is the problem? It's not in that. It's my own mind. So the wind like that, we can blame the external, but the wind is in my own mind like this. That so the more, if I see I'm asangaha, if I meditate more asangaha, I'm unattached, untouched by, then it's easier for me to see, and then they won't pull me as much here and there, easier just to be absorbed in that, like this. So then it's not. An interesting thing, Swami Shivananda has a book on samadhi, all different types of samadhi like this. In Vedanta, it says only there's something called the inborn samadhi, natural. Meaning it's not something, just a state of mind or this, but just sahaja samadhi. It's just natural. Meaning that it's not that I'm doing anything, any special state, but just drikdisha viveka. If it's drikdisha viveka, it's clear. So meaning not just by it just being clear, clarity. So then nothing is really going to take me here and there because I see the mind is going here and there, but that's the mind. It's not me. Just like the thing, the neighbors, the noise there. The noise in the mind is like the noise of the neighbors. Swami Shivananda, when he was towards the end of his life, when he wasn't well, and they asked how he is. He says, both of us are getting along fine here in here. So probably he and the disease are getting along okay. He and the ego are getting along okay. He and the mind are getting along okay. Like this, like your neighbor. Your neighbor is there. Okay, you chat with them. This, they'll do what they do. You do what you do. Doesn't disturb her this. So the mind itself also, the body itself is just the neighbor. So I'm a sangha. So then it's easier, in that case, it's easier to absorb, and it's absorbed by nature. So for us, as we're aspirants, then effort, you know, some effort is needed, some to look into in this. We, in order to do this discrimination, this viveka, in order to get absorbed in this. But for the person, the sahaja samadhi, for the master, it's just their state, their natural state. You don't have to be doing anything else for it. That's how they are, like this. You know, imagine that some other beings come here and they can't walk. And they're saying, wow, how do you do that? And you'll try to train them how to walk because they want to know, how do you do it? I don't know, I just do it. It's just natural. Then you'll have to start breaking down. Well, maybe try to hold the wall. Well, try to keep the balance and start explaining to them how to do it. That's what the Upanishad is doing. The master just sees it. That's just how it is. You don't see it? Okay, let me think. What can I do to show you? So this is how it is, just something natural. And so actually, the interesting thing is, from their perspective, how the worldly person is unnatural. Like this, why? We're disturbed by what? Right? And for us, we say, oh my God, it seems impossible. I'm just suffering. I'm this poor person. How can I get to this in this way? That's the view from the different angles. There's a nice thing that says about Vedanta like this. For the master sees no problem, right? And we see no solution. And the master sees no problems, trying to tell us he sees no solution. How is this like this? So it's a very strange situation. But if we stick to it, then slowly it unfolds and slowly we can see that. You know, one thing you do, especially if you've been looking into this for half a year, at least, or some years, then you look and you see, yes, it is a little clearer than before. If you sincerely do for a year and you don't see anything, then do something else, no problem. But first, anything you do, sincerely you do, and then you see, yes, it is unfolding some things. Yes, it is taking that direction. Okay, so it's doing something. So in this way, so anything we take like that, you do sincerely and then see. And then if good, then wonderful. So it helps to unfold it. A nice thing is said that the Vedanta, studying Vedanta like this, really it's unfolding it, unfolding what is pointed out there. And it does unfold if you keep looking at it like this. Really unfolds and becomes clear and becomes what is real. What is it really trying to say in this way? And then we may have pointed out last time. No, we did with that one. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is what is it again that takes me away? What obstacles we have to this? The obstacles will be of different categories. You can have rajasic, because the mind is restless, wants something else, right? Always wants something else, wants to see a new movie, wants to taste something new, wants to see something else, like this. Always wants, the mind is always racing to some other thing. Never just content to be present. What's wrong with right now? No, I want something else. You worked very hard to get to this place. Yeah, I did. So be here, that's great. No, but then there's something else now important for me to get to. Like this. So the mind is used to that. Used to always looking for something else, for something new, for where does it end? Yeah, in life we have to do things, but that's just the external thing. Just like, you know, red light will stop, green light will go, okay, right? Sun is up, we'll get up. Sun is down, okay, we'll sleep a little, okay. So there is the movement to the world, so we go with it like this. But that I have to get to something, I have to reach something, there must be something new in this, that's endless. And that's rajasic, the mind always wants to. Then also the mind gets a tamasic, resistance or lethargy, right? Tiredness like this gets in the way. That's actually a lot of people, the tamasic takes over when they want to meditate, right? They'll sit and they'll very quickly go to other state of consciousness, like this, slowly. Right? They'll be dozing off when they meditate. So tamasic takes over. And this takes very subtle, I have to have a very sattvic mind for this. That's why yoga asanas, bhajans, chanting, many more people go for this. Because it's not that the rajasic activity will be more, you know, go disco or Bollywood. This is rajasic, hearing the music or dancing with that. That's rajasic, more rajasic activity. But comparatively, asana and chanting is more rajasic than sitting quietly. More activities going on, so it's more sattvic than disco. But it's still more rajasic than sitting quietly. So people will go more to those things. And also, especially if it's some sort of prayer chanting to the God that, okay, I'll do this and the God will, you know, I want this and the God's going to help me. I'll do this much prayer, this much thing, and then worship, and then the god will give me this. So there's also some expectation of the rajas from it too. So what happens though is that, but the tamasic mind, that's why for tamasic mind, at first those things are very important, because otherwise we'll just fall asleep here. So good. So go do chanting a lot and go to the temple and do a lot of Surya Namaskar and then slowly go to asanas like this. Good. For helping to gather the mind, to get the tamas out like this. Because sitting and then falling asleep, tamas the mind isn't ready for, because here it's not just not tamasic rajasic, sattvic, because it's knowing this knowledge is sattva, the sattva portion of the mind. So sattva really takes a lot of subtlety to look into this. And the rajasic mind wants to run to something else. This is nice, but what about understanding this? What about seeing this? What about the mind wants to run to something else? It doesn't want to just stay with it. Restless. So it takes very subtle mind, sattvic, to look into. Now the sattva, where is it going to bind me? Where is it going to get in the way? Is I meditate now, it feels very good. Oh, it's a very nice place. Let me stay there, right? Then you enjoy it, and it's very enjoyable. Oh, wonderful. But you stay with enjoying instead of, you know, abiding in the self, you're enjoying. The Ramakrishna, right? He would say, I prefer to enjoy the honey instead of become the honey. Enjoy the sweetness instead of be the sweetness. So then still I'm keeping some distance from, and I'm enjoying a certain state. Now what happens when that state goes? When it's not there, then what? Will I be enjoying the bitterness too? I'll be suffering when it's not there. Somebody many years in our center in New York said to me at some point, said, you know, when I meditated, I used to see light in this. It was so nice. I don't see the light now. What should I do? So if you have some experiences in meditation, that's wonderful. But then the master then says, very nice, very nice. That'll also go. You want to hold on to an experience, but the experience will change. So here, the essence of experience, that I experience, is the important thing, not what I experience. So that if I'm absorbed myself, yes, I'm just myself, wonderful, great. And just abiding in it. And then if it goes, am I still the same self? Yeah, things are coming, going, I'm still the same one there now too. So that's why it's not the goal in Vedanta. But if there is absorption, that's wonderful. And we can learn from that. I'm there, I can just abide in myself. When not there, am I the same self or not? Am I somebody different? Not, without any mind, anything, I'm there. So meaning, and with things, with mind, with world, I'm there. Meaning I'm independent of, because whether there is experience of world, whether or not, I'm there, same one. So this way, Vedanta, we learn from in order to get to the crux of it, not just for a specific experience and specific condition like this. So the sattva also then binds, because the sattva, then I want to stay with that and stay, and I want to stay with that experience. And that then becomes tamas in some way, because tamas meaning I want to just hold on, stay in one place, one thing. So yes, it's good. It's good to a certain extent, just like hope. For one person, hope is a very good thing because they're down, because of difficult times, like now for the world. Countries that have a leader that's giving them hope will be doing much better psychologically and probably in many other ways than ones who don't give hope. Because they give a hope, yes, we'll get beyond this. Yes, it's difficult times, but we'll work together and we'll get out like this. So at a certain stage for us, hope is good. But later, hope is binding. Hope becomes rajasic or tamasic because I hope it'll be better. Well, right now I'm fine. Why do I need? It will always be future. Hope means future, not present. I can't just be present. So in this way, yes, working to be absorbed is very good. Nice working towards that at some point. But then some point Vedanta says, no, Vedanta, you don't want to try to get to that. You want to see what's always there. What's always there doesn't depend on the state of mind. Here he doesn't go as much into, in the other text that we're studying on Thursday, he does go into to explain how nirvikalpa samadhi is also a state of mind. It's just a state of mind, it's not something else. In order just to clarify, it's still mind. You want to learn how to see the consciousness, not the mind, so don't just be absorbed in state of mind. As a practice, if I'm absorbed, yes, I just abide in myself, wonderful. But are you not yourself when you're not absorbed like that? You're also yourself like this. So this is in this way to understand. But then the nice thing, you do abide in it sometime. You know what we're talking about. Swayam Prabho, self-luminous. You're just self-luminous, just in your own light. Your full existence, right? When you're just absorbing yourself. Full knowingness. Just knowingness, not knowing of something, just knowingness. Full limitlessness. You know that firsthand then. So how wonderful. You know you're that firsthand without needing something else. So this is the nice thing about it also. So in that way, it points out both what you can learn from and also just the traps I can get into like this with absorption like this. So in this, he completes the discussion on the internal samadhis, right? In this way. So now he's going to change and look at the external, because we said we look at the internal and we also look at the external. So now external. Hridiva bahya deshepi yasmin kasmincha vastuni samadhiradya sanmatrat namarupa prithakritihi. Just as within the antakarana, within the mind, also distinguishing externally between any object's name and form from the pure Brahman is the first type of samadhi, right? Savikalpa samadhi, in association with an experienced object. So before was doing it with the internal. Internally, he said kamadhya, any emotion or thought that comes up, like desire, anything that comes up, I know I'm the observer. The state of mind is observed. Whatever happens in mind, the observed. Now externally, we have to separate between what and what. Earlier he said, right, five things, nama rupa asti bhati priyam, right? That's what he talked when introduced before getting into the section, that anything you see, anything, any object, has five different aspects, asti bhati priyam, right, the Satchidananda, so pure existence, nama and rupa. Nama, rupa belong to Brahman, right? Yes? Whose nama, rupa belong? In which purview?
Jiva.
We have here Maya, right, world. Here we have Brahman. Now we have nama, rupa. Which side does it go to?
Maya.
Maya belongs to Maya, right? Because it's mithya. Can you have a name and form without a substance? No. So it's mithya. That's what mithya is. Something that is dependent existence. Right? You had a whole wonderful, last night, whole beautiful world of dreams. It depends on you. It's not independent. So it's mithya. Doesn't have an independent existence. So name and form depends on a substance. It doesn't have independent existence. It's there without the... Without the substance, wouldn't be. So in this way. So when we're looking out, the separation between substance and namarupa. So what have to do? The namarupa have to put aside. Peel the banana and throw out the peel, right? You want just the essence there. So the namarupa is the covering. The presence, everything is. And look, everything it's just one continuous experience. You have one continuous existence, one continuous experience, and the different names and forms come and go. You have the one body of water, you go to the bay, one body of water, and different waves come and go, but the same water is there. So one continuous existence, the same existence, same experience constantly. What is the constant is there? So in this way. The devotee will see it like this. One God is manifesting into everything. So there's the one God manifest. Same idea. Like this. Is the God there change? If the God there was changing, that wouldn't be just the one God, the one thing. It would be a changing thing, so it'd be different. It's the same idea. One Ishvara manifesting in and through everything, all the changing and everything. So this way of whenever looking externally, the world, doing the Viveka in that way. There's the presence and there's that one. That one is in and through everything. So pointing my attention more to the one presence, not to the changing names and forms. This is how doing it externally is saying, right? This is 27. Now what happens again, where does Namarupa affect me? When I look externally, again, it's more what is important to me. Where I have attachment, where I have Raga Dvesha, there. That's where it'll make more of a difference to me. You know, the same news is shown around the world, and different parts of it affect different people because some country or something, this doesn't really matter. But when it's something close to them, oh, now. Like, for instance, with this pandemic, when it was just something that was going on in China, oh, yeah, it's too bad. Yeah, this, I really feel bad for them. Then we flip to the next page. When it got to Europe and started spreading, a little bit more maybe this, so yeah. But the moment it hit here, and then it was big in New York. Here, a little bit. Oh yeah, New York, all those poor people. The moment it hits here, oh my God. But in any case, when I look outside, what is, you know, I in mind, what is more important for me? What is this? That is what is going to be pulling me away from being able to just look equanimously like this. And anyway, myself, my involvement in the world, it's a very temporary thing. They say like this. Imagine you go to some get-together. Some friends invite you. You go over. You come in the middle because people have been there for a long time. So all these conversations are going. You come in the middle of all these conversations. You go in. And you start talking and understanding what's going on this for an hour, two, 3 hours. Then your wife or your husband says, okay, it's time to go. And you leave in the conversations. Everything's still going on and you leave. You come in the middle. There's a lot of noise going on. You make some noise out to it and then you leave in the middle like this. So we come into this world that's already going on so much. We build up all our ideas about it. We get all caught up in it. And then before we know it, also we're gone. And then we make such a big deal out of this world like this where did you see where it came from? Do you know much about it? We know so little. Most of it is just pumped into my mind from other places by other people who have pumped into their mind from their limited ideas. And then we go. And then we want to hold on to everything here too, which we can't. You know, we can do a little bit, but then before that, we're gone. And all that we mix. And without all that, where I came from, where I'm going, who am I behind it, we don't look into. This is what happens. So here it's saying, okay, you know, take a step back and just, you know, see how the whole thing is, you know, the whole thing. There's just the one presence there. So drop these ideas of these differences. And you know where that's pointed out to you very well, how the Raga Dvesha does it. What happens is my Raga Dvesha seems to be, that's the nature of things. That's how it is. That's how my mind thinks. But when somebody that has nothing to do with looks at, it suddenly is like, oh, it's very different. I'll give you a nice example. Having grown up in Israel, it's very clear that, you know, very clear to me, yeah, Israel isn't saintly in this, but in the conflict there, that's the problem, is the Islamic fundamentalism, that's the problem. Now, Swami Ram Sarupananda Ji went there, right? And then he was there twice. He said, yeah, there's people, such silly thing in their mind. They're just two different people. This, they just have to get along. Why are they thinking each other like this? So he sees it from arbitrary way, from new, fresh thought. Not saying these people, just like that. But when you're seeing it from one side, you're seeing, oh, because of them. Had I been born Palestinian territory, I would see it totally opposite way. My Raga Dvesha will be different. Somebody coming with a fresh view, They're so silly. It's just people, both sides in this. So in this way, the raga dvesha, because it's my mindset that I see from this angle, in this way. But in any case then, so the names and forms, why it's hard for me to look beyond them, because my likes, dislikes, I hold on to it. And then from that also my identification, and I have a strong idea about myself, I am this much, so I need things to be like this. All this comes into being. So then this helps to, you know, push my attention beyond that. Push my attention beyond that, not like, not, it's not just like this. And again, example of Swami Ram Sarupanandaji, how he says. He says whenever he looks, somebody comes, he sees like Om is on their face, like it's an Om. So it's all like this. Same person, same one is behind it. It's the same one. Right. Look, the same space is in through behind everything here. It's mostly space. I like this, I don't like that. Well, that's mostly space. Just a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of some particles we don't understand that exist for such fraction of a second is there, mostly space. And we're paying attention to that tiny, tiny, tiny percent. Like this. So the one presence. So whenever looking out, One continuous Brahman, one Sat, one continuous, one substance which manifests everything. So that one substance manifests everything. The substance, not as the very temporary name and form that is there, that comes into being. We don't know how, from where, exists for such a short time and disappears. Now again, without my mindset putting that idea on, if I take my ideas off, how much less important that exact form is, my preconceived ideas, like this. Helps to clear these preconceived ideas. So in this way, this is how it's pointed out. So this is externally, right, the first type. The first type, and it's a little different, but very similar to the first type we're doing internally. But it's important to do externally too. Because what happens just internally, then I clear my misconception myself. But what about the whole rest of everything else? So that's why it's being done on both sides. So then he goes into the second type of practice for external. Akandekara samvastu Satchidananda lakshanam itya vichinna chinteyam samadhir madhyamo bhavet. The second type of samadhi, the savikalpa samadhi, associated with scriptural words, with shabda, is the uninterrupted contemplation upon reality, undivided, unchanging, defined as Satchidananda, which is Brahman itself. First one, I have to experience namarupa. Internally, I experience a thought, an emotion, something like this. Externally, I see anything, I see that, and I distinguish between the substance and the temporary name and form, right? That the form depends on. I see the wave and I remember it's water. Here it's exactly internal, but think of the external world as the one Brahman. Think of it by pointing, using the same ideas that we had before, like akanda, unbroken. One unbroken thing, continuous, like space. That's why the God made the space. So for us to point out, look, there's one continuous, one continuous unchanging thing there, look. But then Einstein came and ruined it for us. No, no, because anything manifest can be a pointer, but can't be the exact same thing. And he didn't ruin it for us. Newton assumed it was one constant thing. Vedanta from the beginning was saying, you know, it's just a manifest thing, and so it wasn't, it was pre-Einstein, it's okay. Ekarasam, and which is homogeneous, right? The space is homogeneous. This space here is very, very thick, but this space here is very, very open. What? Space is space. Can you have a thick space and have a thin spread out space? Space is space. Yeah, it was very hard for the spaceship to go through this area because very thick space. What do you mean? Space is space. my object fits well here, but here it's just moving away because the space is missing. One homogeneous. So ekarasam, like this. So actually, what happens is, when we look externally like this, when we're saying, okay, akanda ekarasam, one of the things is, how do we see differences? This is looked in Vedanta very interestingly. Everything has been analyzed nicely. We're seeing differences. What do you mean by differences? How do you categorize differences? It says, oh, what are differences? There are a few different kinds of differences, like this. So what are the different kinds? One of them is called vijatiya, right? Right? A vijatiya difference like this. Vijatiya bheda. This is difference between different due to classification, right? This is a dog, this is a cat. They're different classes, different jatis, different, you know, a different classification of being. This is an animal, this is a plant, right? So then because they're different, this is different genetically made, or this is living, this is non-living. So then it's a different classification. So that's one type of difference we have. Classify the objects and put them in different groups, and then because different classification, that one is different than this one. This is one type. Okay? So in that way, we classify that. So, you know, we're human beings and the other ones are animals, so we treat them differently because they're different than us, like this. So because of that, we're different. So when the dog says it's time to go for a walk, well, he's the boss, so he's the king of the house. We go for a walk because he said go for a walk, because he's different kind. If he was saying kind of like me, I'll say, no, we're, you know, you go, it's okay. So this is one type, between different classifications of beings. Second one is sajatiya. Sajatiya bheda. This is differences within the same species, within the same classification. Jati can also be species. So, okay, humans, they're men and they're women, right? It's like this. There's Asian, there's African American, there's white, there's Native American, in this way. There is somebody has this type of blood, somebody has that type of blood. This way, so you can see differences within every species as well, right? This kind of, the Fuji apple and the Pink Lady apple, so the somebody likes this one because it's kind of sour, somebody doesn't like the sour, they like the sweet one. So different types within the species also, that's another way you can have differences, right? Like this. One more type of difference there is swagata. Swagata bheda. This swagata. This is differences within one being. Because here it's interbeing, now within one. I'm a person, but I have a left hand and I have a right hand. They're different. Right? I have a head and I have feet. They're different. Some people, we don't see the difference. But but we see it. Hopefully we see some difference. Right? So I see a difference within myself between different parts. Because different parts of something will have this. And the moment you have anything, you'll see the different parts in it. The space, there are no parts you don't see, but they make a map of the universe, the known universe. Interestingly, there's some huge part that was hidden, huge thing. I think they called this Southern Wall or something, because they didn't have the capacity to. I think our galaxy is blocking it or something. It's behind, so they couldn't. Just recently, they found, like, amazing. So they're making a map of the universe. The map of the universe is the objects, not the space. They're saying out of space. It's the objects. So here, these differences are the differences. Now, when I say akanda, unbroken, unchanging, right? Unbroken, can there be a vijatiya, bheda, in the space? There is no other object. So how can there be another object to be a vijatiya bheda, space, or then the Brahman, the substance of whole universe? Is there another substance? No, there's one substance, which is universe. So you can't have a vijatiya bheda there. How can there be a difference with some other one like it? There isn't. With a different one. There's a different space. There's not a different space. Or a different category. Well, the Brahman is the substance of everything. How can there be another category? Like if everything, you have a set of some of the dish set and it's all made out of clay. You can have between cups and saucers and this, but not between clay because it's one clay. So you're everything made out of the same thing. How can there be differences with another kind or within the species? Species of the clay in the plates. It's the same thing. So this one, akanda, the unbroken continuous, means there isn't, these two cannot exist in it. Now, ekarasam is saying it's homogeneous. You as consciousness, homogeneous. Existence, sat, everywhere, homogeneous, one existence. So there's no swagata bheda, no internal differences. Again, space, there's the space in this direction, there's one space. So existence, pure existence, Brahman, one existence. It's not, no separate parts in it. Right? It's partless. That's what homogeneous means, partless. Because otherwise there would be the left and the right. The heart would be on this side, right? The head would be on the top like this. But no. So that's how then, when meditating on these things, it breaks down the differences. When you look at these pointers, they say no differences in this way. So this is a few of the points about this meditating externally on this. And then next week we can continue with some more points about it. Right? Next week we have to have differences. But, you know, in this world, that's one thing Vedanta is. In this world, yes, we have to deal with, we're just to talk, there are differences. We're talking about the essence. The essence, not about the surface part. So next week we will discuss about the same presence that's here now as will be here then, same one. Just a different wave in the same ocean, same substance. Like this. Om. Om. Om Purnamadah Purnamidham Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.